You're listening to your MBA podcast with Larry O'Brien. Kane, I've got no intro today. You know, it's hard to come up with an uplifting intro when I'm looking at our running sheet and the topics you got here are more mass shootings, Shanghai lockdown watch.
Lakers hired a new head coach.
I see you removed the previous item of Australia elected a new prime minister. What is the impact on China relations?
I thought that might be too local. I think when I wrote this sheet, I was in a mindset. I was in a really political mindset. So I thought at the beginning, before we started, I thought maybe I'd just adjust it slightly to be more light, have a lighter tone.
Thank you for your contributions, Kane.
No, thank you.
In my experience, it's best not to let these type of feelings pester and develop inside you. Tell me about what you think about the recent Australian election, which just ended last week.
I voted for a minority party. And yeah, I think the main thing from Australian politics from this election, the main takeaway is that the major parties, the left and the right, if you will, they lost. And it's a rise of independents and minor parties like the Greens, which, as you can guess, it's like more towards climate change and things that young people, our generation, would be more concerned with going to the future. So that's who I voted for. I mean, we don't have to talk about this, but we talk about mass shootings after mass shootings in America, and people want to talk about police reform, which is important. I think police reform is something they should look at. But more importantly, how about gun reform? Like the Republicans were so adamant to get abortion, into legislation, but they won't even consider voting on gun reform. So it just shows where the Republican Party is at, and it's just, yeah. All they care about is the guns, God, and Donald Trump, I guess.
Guns, God, and fetuses. They don't care about when you grow up. They definitely don't care about when you grow up, especially if you're poor. But if you're a fetus, you're God's child.
As soon as you're born, you're on your own.
Yeah. You bring up this very important topic about gun violence in the U.S. And of course, we have another mass shooting. And I encourage our listeners to go to YouTube, if you haven't already, and watch the Steve Kerr press conference.
I think it was game six.
Game four. They won in five. So it was a game before in Dallas. So before the game, Steve Kerr used his time with the press to talk about gun violence, and he was incredibly emotional. And I have to say, I was very touched by what he had to say. It was very genuine. And I'm not someone that, you know, when I watch politicians or, you know, leaders, quote unquote leaders, talk about stuff, I just like, I'm too cynical. I'm like, what bullshit is this?
Yeah, I think everyone is, especially if it's a politician that is on a, part of a major party.
And, you know, especially celebrities, where if Mark Cuban's talking about stuff, like, it makes me sick. Steve Kerr, oh my goodness, this was so genuine, so real. You can see him trembling, his lips were trembling.
Oh my God, when he banged his fist and he was like, his lip was quivering, like he was about to cry, that got me. Every time I see that replay, every time I kind of, I'm scared watching it because he speaks with such emotion and passion. And you know where it comes from, right? Like, you know his background.
Yes, I do. His dad, I believe, was an ambassador or worked at the consulate in Lebanon, I want to say, in the Middle East. And he was assassinated, right?
Gunned down, yeah.
Gunned down. It's a topic, whether it's Middle East, whether it's racism or friction in the Middle East or gun violence, these are topics that obviously resonate with Steve Kerr. And, you know, just having a leader within the league talk like that, and like you said, watch him in that really vulnerable, opening himself up and being really vulnerable, it was incredible. I was very touched by it. Like you, when I'm even thinking about it, it's a bit emotional. But, you know, these are some things I might, you know, decide to check that video again, once in a while.
Yeah, I watched it a couple.
Yeah, just to remind myself how this is an important topic, okay? And this is the right type of feeling that we should be having. Not glossy terms or sound bites, but these real emotions.
Yeah, and the key stat that I didn't even know about was 90% of Americans want background checks, or even like 90% of Americans want some type of gun reform, obviously. So the fact that 90% of Americans want it, like we he said, we want it, but the small power, like the small minority of people and the politicians that are corrupt by it, not letting this go through the Senate, just shows the imbalance and the inequality, and the result is politicians just favoring the money and the greed and the power over children's lives. And yeah, I actually, you know, like actually, I admit, I went on to, I don't know if you've read it much. I've started like to get into Reddit, but I went on to the subreddit conservative, our conservative, which is obviously very, very right wing. And usually on topics of anything, I like to lurk in there once in a while just to see what they talk about topics. Like, for example, the Jonathan Swan interview on Donald Trump. Mm. I love to see what conservatives say about obvious egg in your face moments. And in this instance, about the latest mass shooting in Texas on an elementary school, so talking about school children, I wanted to see what they were talking about. Like, you know, is this something that would change their minds on gun violence or gun reform? And surprisingly, a lot of them were quite on the same side. Like, they want the police to be better. They were bagging out the police, calling them cowards and saying they're like not fit to be police officers, because we don't have to get into the whole timeline and everything, but basically they should have stormed in straight away, and they were just 19-20 officers just loitering outside for up to over an hour, not doing anything, while the gunman was roaming around. But more importantly, like, forget about what the police could have done. That's human error. Like, what could you have done? What is something fundamental in every mass shooting that if you got rid of it, or if you reduce the accessibility of it, would eliminate a lot of mass shootings? And it's obviously, like, the gun. And unfortunately, even in the R conservative, they don't really bring it up. They talk about police reform. They're willing to go that far, but guns is still off topic. So there's still a huge contingent of people that don't believe in it. And I, you know, even if they are a minority, it's just, I guess I feel a bit sad, because I'll just finish with this point. Like, in Australia, we had a mass shooting, like when I was maybe a baby, like 996 or something. And after that, the Liberal government, so the right wing government, implemented the a gun ban, basically a buyback.
Sorry, for accuracy, that would be center right.
Yeah, back then they were much more center right, but you know, I'm just talking about in binary terms, like left and right. And even in that time, the, you know, more right wing government implemented the gun reform, and it was no question, it was a bipartisan issue. And in America, even after all these years, after all these mass shootings, this is not even the worst one. Even 10 years ago, the Sandy Hook one was like over 20 students, and the one in Parkland, Florida, was in the teens as well. Over a dozen students murdered, and yet still nothing has been done to this day, and probably nothing will continue to be done.
You know, the days of me worrying about how I can make America better and worrying about this, it's over, right? I feel like that might have been Columbine, or maybe like, you know, 20, I forgot what it was, but some weirdo went up in Virginia Tech, he took a machine gun, went up to some clock tower and like gunned down a bunch of students, right? Whatever year that was, like, that's when I was like, you know, really hopeful, really engaged in wanting America to be better and wanting change. But at this point, it's like, why am I worrying about it? Because this country, it's not for me to worry and to change them, right? Because at this point, it's like, if you want it, then real action needs to be taken. I don't know what the path is, but I encourage all American citizens to find out what actions can be taken. You know, whether it's writing to politicians, whether it's be proactive about it, right?
Yeah, far from it, like a Canadian and Australian trying to make sense of American gun laws, like something that founding fathers 200 years ago wrote when they were thinking about guns. They were probably thinking of like these long ass rifles that they had to like stuff like a bullet like through the hole at the front with a
like a musket.
with a long, musket with a long, like, piece of, like, to push it down. And then they had to, like, light the string to, like, diffuse the gunpowder. And then they could only shoot once. We're not talking about, the founding fathers 200 years, but we weren't thinking about, like, AR-15s and AK-47s and, you know, assault rifles that shoot, like, 40 bullets a second.
You know why they used to, like, line up all in a row and have, like, kind of, like, all bunched together and shooting the musket at the same time, right? It's because those weapons, there's no accuracy in them. So essentially, you're just, like, volleying a bunch of random shots at that general direction, you know, in one big volley, and that's going to kill a bunch of people.
But it's more portable. It's more portable than the cannon.
For me, it's deeply disappointing. And I feel like, if anything, it's getting worse. I mean, this year we've had, what do we have? We have...
I mean, yeah, there's over 200 mass shootings just this year. Over 200 in the US alone. And in Australia, we've had one since 1996.
Now, you've sometimes criticized me for being pragmatic because you feel like I need to be more proactive in social causes. I sometimes accept just the status quo or the way the world is. So I can be pragmatic in the sense that, okay, maybe you can't ban just handguns. Maybe, you know, there's something uniquely exceptional about America where they need to have handguns, right? That people love handguns. So maybe you give them the handgun, okay? But surely at this point we can ban assault rifles, like military weapons. Military weapons are probably better and more powerful than whatever they're using in Ukraine right now.
It is such a moot point because, like you said, we can't affect any law. Like, you and I just get sad talking about it. So, yeah, let's talk about Shanghai instead.
Shanghai lockdown. Look, I agree with you. Let's wrap this part up with just saying, please, if you haven't watched Steve Kerr, go watch Steve Kerr. That's a Warriors coach. That's leadership. That's incredible. And I was incredibly touched and motivated by Steve Kerr.
I was surprised. I was just watching it. I didn't even read the headline. It just, like, popped up. I think I was just, like, flicking through on YouTube, and it just, like, popped up as the next thing. And because I think I was, like, brushing my teeth, and it just came on. And he started banging his fist, and I'm like, whoa, what is going on? Like, what is he so passionate about? And then it just caught my attention. It's a short watch. It's only 4 minutes long. But you're right. It's such a impassioned and, like, a beautiful. It's quite beautifully said too. A very articulate plea that he makes, and it's just so well said, and it's so touching, like you said. And definitely. If you haven't seen it yet, definitely encourage everyone to watch it. Just to hear this man's passion. He's just a great man, to be honest. Thinking about it, as much as I don't like the Warriors winning all the time, I just feel like there's no... It's hard to root for a coach as much as you root for Steve Kerr for the hand he's given. Like, he was kind of given this team, and yet...
Okay, how do we segue now to basketball? Well, if we're talking about the Miami Heat and the Boston Celtics, I'm not sure if... I mean, literally, I watched a game where they didn't have a field goal for, like, 9 minutes. It was fucking like 4 minutes left.
That was game four or something.
It was like 4 minutes left in the quarter. And the Heat had like 8 points. I was like, what's happening? Help.
But they did the same thing. Game four, they was like a must win. And then in game seven, once again, like, I mean, like, you go ahead. You set the topic up.
I'm extremely frustrated about this Miami Heat and Celtics series. On one hand, it was such a hard-fought series. I feel like it wasn't easy, right? On the other hand, it was just so incredibly frustrating to watch. I mean, the Miami Heat, God bless them, but this is not... Are they a basketball team? I'm not sure. Does Kyle Lowry play basketball or some basketball-inspired sport?
I mean, it's impressive that they got so far without a true superstar. I'll put it that way. I mean, they lost the offense all of a sudden. They had a complement of scorers before, but all of a sudden they had to rely on Oladipo to make key runs. And Hero being out didn't help. I think Hero is the best offensive player because he's someone that you can actually give the ball to. And he can, like, make a bucket here and there. But if he's out or he's injured, then there's nobody on that team that can just go and fight for an own shot. And obviously, Jimmy Butler scored like 47 points or 49 points in the game six. Hero effort, all-timer, one of the best games, you know, you'll see from a superstar kind of ish player. But he's not giving that on a nightly basis. This guy is more in line with like a low 20-point average and like playing defense and setting his teammates up. He's not some guy that's going to go out and score 40 points a game, even 30 points a night.
I definitely respect Jimmy, but, you know, for two or three games there, he was absolutely nothing. He couldn't score like a single point. Yeah. And, you know, the rest of the time, yes, he was scoring 40 points, but like, Jesus, like if he didn't score, someone's got to score, right? I mean, you give like the ball to some guy, like, he's just like, the thing is with Jimmy is, God, I love him, but he can't shoot. So sometimes, yes, he can score in bunches. And then like, you know, for the next 5 minutes, he'd be jacking up like shots that hit either the front rim or the backboard. And the Celtics, for whatever reason, can't put games away.
It's really I have no real read on the Celtics, because I think if you look at the playoff run, it's like one of the most impressive playoff runs in recent history. Like just in terms of teams that like stand out, they swept the Nets. They got to Game 7 against the Bucks. They beat the Bucks Game 7 at home. And then they beat the Heat in Game 7 on the road. And, now they're here. And they've never done this before. You know, Jason Tatum, his rookie season, got to Game 7 against LeBron James. And since then, his, like, star was just burning bright. And since then, he's been knocked out. In his last three seasons, he got knocked out by, I don't know the exact order, but he got knocked by the Heat, the Bucks. And last season got, like, handled easily by the Brooklyn Nets. This year, he beat them all. He got revenge on all those teams in this postseason.
Legit.
So I'm really, I think the run, I think the resume this season really stacks in favor of the Celtics. I think they should be confident heading into the finals. Like, we can talk about predictions later, but they should be feeling pretty confident given the teams that they faced. Mm. Like, in terms of like the guys early on in the season, in the regular season, talking about these teams are real deals. This is the number one seed Miami Heat. This is the reigning defending champion Bucks. And this is the betting favorites like throughout the entire year, no matter the roller coaster season they went on, the Brooklyn Nets. Even entering the postseason at the seventh seed, they were betting favorites to win the chip. So you can't take that away from the Celtics. I think the confusing thing is, even though that resume, that playoff, this postseason run stacks up with some of the best, you can't discount the injuries that's happened to all three teams. And the Heat being the least injured is like the craziest thing, because they were crazily injured, but none of the key players were out. You could talk about Hero being out later on, but you know, that was just an unfortunate thing. And Hero is by far not the most important player on that team.
But they were so compromised.
But they were so compromised in so many different ways. Obviously, Jimmy Butler, like you said, Chris Middleton was out for the Bucks, and the Nets had two of the five starters out as well. So, and the Celtics too are hampered. Yeah, Robert Williams has been in and out, but you talk about depth as well for this team, because Robert Williams is out, and then Al Horford steps up and is fucking like, he's playing like 25 years old, defensive player of the year, Al Horford. Marcus Smart has been out, in and out, but then Derek White has this like all-time game stepping in for Marcus Smart. Is like just as good of a defensive, like seems like he's just as good as defensive player. It just seems like they're so stacked like on the team, and I think it's going to favor them well if injuries continue to pop up, like Robert Williams is a bit slow this day, or Marcus Smart's is it his knee or ankle, I don't know, something like ankle or something, it flares up, then they got depth as well to help them through and guard Steph Curry. I don't think that they're going to be too concerned about the backup pieces in case something happens game to game.
Well, this is the frustrating thing for me this year, is the fact that I hope the Celtics don't win, But if the Celtics won, I've got nothing. I have to give it to them. Because I think, like you said, if we look at the road to the finals, and ultimately if they win the finals, you couldn't ask for...
Beating the Warriors.
Beating the Warriors. The Miami Heat. Number one seed in the East, right? Milwaukee Bucks, Giannis, all-time Giannis.
Reigning champs.
Brooklyn Nets. We can say, yes, the Bucks were injured, the Heat were compromised, they were injured, but at the same time, if you're a Celtic, it's like, I can only play the teams in front of me, right? Like, if Kyrie doesn't want to eat, I can't force him to eat.
Yeah.
Apparently, I mean, no one can, apparently.
Yeah, but you're right. Like, yeah, well, Steve Nash isn't a real coach. I don't know if that gets an asterisk. And also, a war criminal is
okay. Well. You calm down. Okay, you of course you're making a very inappropriate joke about Josiah, who happens to be.
I was talking about Steve Nash.
Okay, Steve Nash. Someone on Reddit posted.
Yeah, I didn't get it.
Someone on the Reddit posted an image of Steve Nash with Josiah, the Nets owner, at a Liberty game.
I think it was something like Josiah with a war criminal.
Yeah, Josiah with a war criminal. Okay, I like that. I like that. Of course, immediately you didn't like read the joke. You just immediately told me about how Josiah is a war criminal. But anyway, that's for you and your family to work on, okay? Don't put that on me. Don't put that on the anyway, peaceful people of China.
So,
okay.
Anyway, so yeah, I agree with you. You can't keep making excuses to discredit the Celtics at this point. I'm watching this Eastern Conference Finals with the same lens I was watching the Eastern Conference semifinals last year between the Bucks and Nets. And that was a game 7 too. But you can't tell me like how that was multiple like overtime over like how many overtimes was in that series, you know? And it wasn't even for like a lack of trying. We saw Kevin Durant with his toe on the line and then played every minute, like for three straight games, he played like every single minute. I don't even know how he does that. And Giannis just battling out and no one could stop Giannis at the same. It was just like the strengths and strengths and strengths. And here I'm just seeing weaknesses. Like Heat don't look like they belong here, yet they got to a game 7. So that really speaks to the Celtics like overall strength. Like how did the Heat team, this banged up with no offensive identity, get to game 7? Like that really has to make you think that they could, you know, win at least 3 games against a vaunted Celtics defense too. How could a Celtics defense that's considered like all-time great, where every one of their starters got a defensive player of the year vote, allow a Heat team that has no,
absolutely zero offense,
win 3 games? In today's modern NBA, there's no way a defense can just single-handedly win you a game. It doesn't work like that. So I think these are question marks to the greatness of this year's Celtics, even if they do win the finals. But ultimately, it's like, so what? You know, they won. Like, who cares, you know? Like, they'll do it however they want. I'm just not willing to put them with, like, the all-time great teams, that's all.
We think back to that amazing LeBron James performance, Game 7 against the all-time great, the Warriors. You know, neither team scored for like 4 minutes, right? But you felt the intensity. It was so intense.
It felt, I mean, totally. Yeah.
The difference between that and the Heat and Celtics is that the Heat are jacking up like air balls for 4 minutes straight. And then the Celtics are having like 6 turnovers within that period. You know, Jaylen Brown just... The only thing that Oladipo can do at this point is to take the ball away from Jaylen Brown. That's the only skill that he has. He has no other redeeming quality. He can't shoot. He can't jump. All he can do is take the ball away from Jaylen Brown.
Yeah.
That's the only game he's playing.
It was unfortunate because I thought like Oladipo was having a pretty fine postseason up until the Eastern Conference final. So I don't know how that will affect his market. I assume he's a free agent.
Oh my God, he's getting $0.
But yeah, that was a pretty ugly... I liked him. I was texting him. I was like, Oladipo is like the only scorer that they got now if Jimmy Butler's on the bench. And unfortunately, he proved me like wrong. So and he was good prior, like in the other games against the Hawks and the Sixers. He was really good in spurts. like you had so many role players just step up in so many different ways that you couldn't predict like who was going to be the main player to stop for the Heat, because they just had so many players that were doing the part and doing the job and going above it sometimes. But in the finals, in the Eastern Conference Finals, everyone just sucked except Jimmy Butler. And like Tyler Hero, like, was playing great before, sucked.
He was injured.
Fine, but he sucked anyway. Bam just absolutely, like, Bam was the worst player. Like
what happened to him? Where'd he go?
He was invisible. He was invisible. PJ Tucker couldn't shoot for, all of a sudden, PJ Tucker, this guy that every time he versus the Nets, I see him, he's like fucking shooting lights out. He couldn't hit this fucking shot.
I think he was injured by the end. He didn't come back, like, after the third period.
It doesn't matter. Like, you make do with what you got, which is what the Celtics are doing. So give them credit, because they were injured as well. They had key players injured, and they made do. They won. But yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, they won Game 7, you know, 5 points, you know, 5 point lead. I forgot the final score, but
how about that Oladipo shot from like 40 feet out with like?
I felt like people didn't talk about that enough, because people like always talk about the Jimmy Butler, like.
No, I like that shot.
Like a winning three that he took, like thinking it was a bad shot.
I thought it was going in.
I like that shot too. Me too. And I thought it was close enough. Like it's worth a shot. The Oladipo one was probably the worst sequence of basketball of the entire game. And that was ugly.
Because at first they thought he was going for 2-for-1. But then the announcer was like,
but he took so long. He was waiting for so long on the shot, and then by the time he took it, the Celtics had like, you know, like their own. They didn't have to give the ball back.
Look, to be fair, he played very good defense in the series, but I mean, offensively, and it gives me no pleasure to say this, because Oladipo, this was like a 25-point score, and wasn't he like in a dunk competition at one point? Like this guy, because of injuries,
I think he won it.
He won it, right?
I think he also won it too.
Like there was this one layup where he didn't even have any lift, couldn't jump anymore. Yeah. So on some levels, that's really sad, right? Because you have this elite scorer who, because of injuries, have lost that ability entirely. Defensively, he was very good. But also it made me think about, you know, that contract he turned down. He turned down a 2-year, $40 million contract from Houston. You know, you say, what is his value during this offseason? I don't know. I think he's definitely important.
No, it's plummeted. It's definitely plummeted. I think at best, I was thinking before the finals, I thought maybe he could take on a multiple year mid-level exception kind of thing. You know, like you can sign that, but you can sign it for more than 2 years. But at that amount, I think PJ Tucker took that sort of deal. But at this point, I feel like a team might offer it to him, but in reality, probably just gets the minimum at this point.
Right. And once you're in that minimum bracket, you can't...
Dennis Schroeder.
Oh, get Dennis Schroeder. Like, that's even worse.
Yeah, I feel like some team might give it to him, like the Kings or something like that, but
Dennis Schroeder, they tried to give him $90 million, he said no.
Yeah, he was like, no, not good enough.
Talk to my agent Dinwiddie.
But when you were talking about good defense and zero offense, I was just thinking about Mr. 0.0, Mr. Lowry.
Okay. Okay, you be careful now.
We gotta agree, he's a legend. I'll admit, he's a legend. But at this point, he's washed, right? Like he can't play basketball at this point.
I think he's injured.
I don't know what I was watching out there. He's always injured. But at this point, when I'm watching him, I don't think he is actually playing basketball anymore. I mean, he's playing like flag football or something.
He's playing
like
something that includes a basketball, but it's definitely not basketball as we know it. Just because everything takes place like below the knees, he's like on the floor rolling around.
It's like maybe like wrestling or something, like but with the basketball.
I really do feel he's valuable. Like he's without him there would be
no, it's a start
without off. Him. Okay, maybe. But okay, first of all, he's injured. Second of all, without him, there would be no Game 7. He saved
Yes, he had an amazing game six, which came out of nowhere. He shot like deep threes and stuff like that. But then game seven rolls around, and then what does he do?
But that's the thing. I'm saying, like, you know, for a player like that who's injured, he can't
break. A starter, remember. He's meant to be a starter.
I know, but who else are you going to start? That's the thing. Like, there's no one else that you would start.
Well, that's what I'm saying. That's why the Heat need to move on from him.
Right, right. Okay, I see what your point. I see your point. Look.
I'm saying he's washed up. Like, you can't keep starting for your championship caliber team. At best, he's a role player, like someone you can bring. But honestly, like, I don't see the value in him, because if he's a role player and he can't score, like, what's the point? Like, what's the point of having him? He's short. He's like below 6'1".
He's very strong. He's sneaky. He's sneaky strong.
He's so strong, yeah, because like he's like swimming on the ground.
You know, there's one play where he was like using his head to ram like Jaylen Brown's ass. I think I texted you. I was like, what is he trying to do?
Even on the layup, he's just like flinging the ball up. He's like, it doesn't seem like he's aiming for the basket. He's just like, he knows he's gonna get, like, draw contact, so he's just catapulting the ball up in the air, hoping like it'll ricochet around the arms and like it'll go in somehow. I admit he's a legend. He won a championship, for God's sake, for the Raptors. But he gets too much publicity. I think he's so overrated at this point. Like, him getting podium time after game six, because like he's one of the pivotal players, like, give me a break. Like, this guy hit some lucky three-point shots. He ended with like 13 points. Is like, he doesn't deserve podium time because he scored like 13, 15 points as a starting point guard. Like, that's what you expected to do if you want to be a champ. And then after they lose the championship, he has the audacity to say, this is a waste of a season. We expect every year to go to the championship. Well, what the fuck did you do to like help this team get to deserve to go to the finals? They got this far despite of you. Like, in my honest opinion, they got this far despite of him.
Oh, okay.
Like, you starting down. Point guard scoring 0 points for multiple games. And he scored 0 points for multiple games. He didn't score. And it's not for lack of trying. This guy shot like six, seven attempts.
Look, I watched Raptors. I'm used to that. I've seen Raptors in the playoffs.
But he was so much more athletic. Like, that's the thing. Like, Kyle Lowry, yeah, fine. He flirted with zero, but he was big time in fourth quarter. And he's someone that you couldn't take off the fourth quarter because he was a defensive stalwart. Right. Like, he was so hard to move. And he hit tough layups in the fourth quarter. This is like clutch shots. He was very clutch. Now he's lost his touch. He's much slower. He's like headbutting people's asses. he's not playing basketball anymore at this point. So I don't want to like make it seem like I hate Kyle Lowry.
I love him.
I just want to pick on him more because you love him so much. And I just want to convince you that he's washed up. You got to be objective about this.
I'm not going to use the word washed up, but I can definitely get on board with you saying that maybe you can't start him anymore, right? He's definitely valuable for an organization, but you can't rely on Kyle Lowry to be like take you over anything, right?
Yeah, I mean, you could sign him the same way Udonis Haslem has a roster spot.
No, you got to get more.
That's the equivalent that Kyle Lowry gets. He's just like a cheerleader at this point to me.
He's making good money, though. Kyle Lowry is making.
Still? Oh, is he still? I thought he might be on the end of his contract.
He's making like over $20 million, isn't he?
Well, yeah, his current contract. Is it still happening?
I'm pretty sure they signed him to a new Let's one, see. Didn't they?
Oh, God. That was his year one.
That was year one.
Oh, God. He's 36 years old and he still has like 2 years at like 28 and 29 million. Oh God.
So if I was Jaylen Brown, I'd watch out. This is just year one. He's planting the
He's planting the
seed for that injury in year four. He's gonna take out your glutes.
Here's his agent. Jesus.
No. See, you laugh at that. I'm okay with that contract.
Sorry, Tyler Hero, we can't give you a new contract because we need Kyle Lowry butting people's asses for $28 million.
Well, no, you can't. No, you can't do that. Obviously, you have to. You're overpaying, but I'm saying you pay Lowry and don't cheap out, right? You have to pay whatever for the next star or to keep Hero. right? But I'm okay with them giving Kyle Lowry a big contract because I do think he's still valuable. And I think he was a bit injured. Mm. He was probably a little out of shape. But maybe the dice is rolled differently next time. So I don't mind that.
Also, don't forget, Duncan Robinson is like signed also a $90 million contract last offseason as well.
Oh, God. Jesus Christ. Like, they didn't even play him at all.
He just signed it last offseason. And yeah, he's now a bench.
Why did they sign him if they don't play him? Like, they must... Like, what happened there?
More importantly, why didn't they play him? I don't get that more. Who's better than Duncan Robinson? Like, he couldn't play after he got benched because his confidence was shot. Like, you can understand that. But I don't understand why they would sit him for undrafted players.
I'm not really sure. Because, you know, what do they play? Gabe...
Like, who's this Struce and who's this Gabe Vincent? Like, they're fine. Like, you know, Gabe...
Struce was really good for a couple of games there. But then he spent, like, the next...
Struce?
He spent the next three games. He shot, like, 2 for 18 from three.
I mean, he's fine, but, like, can't Duncan Robinson give you that? Like, Duncan Robinson's taller, and, like, maybe, like, Struce is a better defender, but, like, I don't think Robinson is that bad of a defender. I don't know, like, it baffled me that he must have, like, I don't know, like, must have slept with Spolster's daughter or something.
Calm down there. I don't think he has a daughter. His wife is hot, though. Have you seen his wife? Jesus. That's, like, Miami living. That's all I'm going to say.
Maybe he slept with his wife.
My mind immediately goes to, like, drama like that normally. But Duncan Robinson? No, he looks straight edge. I mean, he looks...
I mean, something pretty serious, too. I mean, average, fine, but you signed him just last offseason for $90 million for 5 years. You have him. I mean, unless you trade him. It's tradable.
Oh, it's definitely tradable.
It's not... Like, you just hurt his trade... Well, you're hurting his trade value now by benching him. So something seriously is wrong, like, to bench him, because I don't know, because they tried playing him later, like,
no, but they never really gave him a chance, right? So is this something that's behind the scenes, like, is he like, but I've seen interviews with him, like, he didn't come across as like an asshole or
no, he's taking on the chin, he's a professional, but yeah, I think he must have slept with Spolster's wife or something, like, that's the only explanation.
But again, you're joking, obviously. That's not a rumor.
I'm not.
I have to say, though, Spo's wife, like, 10 out of 10.
Jesus. I'm going to Google this shit. Former cheerleader, has two sons. Yeah. So, like, who knows? Maybe, yeah, she came to practice, you know, said, like, hey, Eric... are you almost done with practice yet? And then Duncan comes up and, like, trying to be all friendly and charming, and like, oh, you know, Eric is busy running.
What does Duncan sound like? Does he have a deep voice?
Hey, Mrs. Spolstra. I'll get Eric in a second. I'll get Coach in a second. He's just busy wrapping up. I'll give you a tour of the training facility if you want.
I gotta shoot my shot. What if he, like, has a really high-pitched voice?
Hey, how's it going, Mrs. Spolstra?
Like, really, like...
Hey, Nikki!
Like, what do you call it? Like, it's, like, breaking?
Hey, Nikki! Hey, Mrs. Spolstra!
Hey, Mrs. Spolstra! I didn't shoot my shot.
I really think you're beautiful.
Rebound my balls for me. All right, let's... Okay. Anyway, let's just calm down here.
He what? And then Eric is like, what? He did what?
Okay. That was a unsubstantiated rumor. That was just... We're just having a bit of fun. That was actually not the rumor. But, okay, let's talk quickly about the Warriors and Mavs. Is there anything to talk about? Because I was not surprised at all about this result.
It was really boring. It was lopsided every game for some reason. The Warriors, to me, are just... I don't know why I feel like this way with the Warriors and not the Celtics, but it feels like they're just toying with the opponents. Like, if they lose, they're just like, whatever, we'll get them next game. There's always a next game for the Warriors. They're just that good. And I don't know. I think that, to me, that Like, I think that they're going to be super confident. Like, I don't see why they should be scared of the Celtics when they've beaten the likes of LeBron's Cavs before, you know?
Let me ask you this. For the Mavs, by the way, Andrew Wiggins, Jesus Christ, how good is that trade?
Yeah, Andrew Wiggins. I mean, that was great. I'm impressed with Jordan Poole, too. Like, the draft picks have been super good. Something's cooking there in Golden State. Yeah, something's cooking over there where they're just nailing every draft pick. James Wiseman might be the odd one out, but everything else has been like gold, spinning gold on those reconstructed ankles.
On the Mavs side, what's the next move?
Next move is like a superstar. I said this. I might have been premature. I said the Mavericks. I really like the Mavericks this season, coming into the regular season this year. I said, look out for the trade deadline because the Mavs are going to be making big moves. But at this point, I might be a little bit hesitant to be all in, like, because they got to find a superstar. They got to find another superstar to pair with Luka Doncic. That's the reality. It's hard to find a superstar, but they got to work every angle, explore every stone unturned. They have to do it because that's the only chance of winning a championship, convincing Luka to stay on, and being relevant. Because yeah, this was a nice story, making the finals, but who knows how much better the Grizzlies get, or even the Pelicans could get if everything stacks up right to them. The Wolves are making a lot of moves to be in better position. Anthony Edwards is looking like a star player, and Karl Anthony Towns is already a superstar player to me. So they got to make moves. They got to act fast. Is this a place where DeAndre Ayton, they trade for DeAndre Ayton? Is this something like where they try to get Bradley Beal or Tim Hardaway still on that deal? Like, Tim Hardaway and Spencer Dinwiddie are tradable players that they could move to try to, get another star player. Maybe they swap back. Maybe CJ McCollum is on the move and they say, look, we're going to pay a pretty penny. Like, Pelicans did a wise move getting buying CJ for 50 cents. Now they get to sell him at $1.50. You know what I mean? So maybe the Dallas Mavericks.
And the Mavs, I think they need a bit more defense than CJ.
My point is they might have to overpay, like what the Nets have done multiple times, to overpay to bring a proper superstar to his organization. And Mark Cuban can't cheap out. Like, he cheaps out on his roof, leaking all the time and causing delays. He has to get his shit together. He's got to fix his house. He's got to fix the leaks in his building.
He just stays in the player's locker room. It's tight there. No leaks there. He doesn't go home. He doesn't go to the...
Very
doesn't
tight.
Go into any other room.
Very tight indeed.
So we know him really for his like freewheeling ways, right? Being like an owner that overspends for better arena, better locker room. But I think the Mavs are like the 15th highest payroll, and they're like under the luxury tax. I think they haven't paid the luxury tax since their championship season.
Yeah, Mark Cuban's got to open his wallet, and the GM has to feel empowered to trade multiple draft picks to get the player that they want. And you can't just be like, this is a win-win. Like, you have to take on some risk, basically, to get there. Because, look, you look at the Warriors and even the Celtics, who kind of built homegrown talent, and it's just so hard. Like, not every team is going to be in that position where they're going to hit on multiple draft picks in a row, Like, it's incredibly hard to do. So, look, you got Luka. You locked out with Luka. He's a generational talent. Just do the right thing and trade 5 first-round picks for Zion, because Zion's maybe on the low, and his risk is he's a huge injury risk. But you know what? The payoff could be Zion could be the best thing to play next to Luka for half a decade. Like, you got to take some kind of risk, basically, to see some reward.
I do want to be fair and say that it's not that Cuban was trying to cheap out and staying under the tax. I mean, they tried to get Deron Williams. They tried to get Dwight. It just didn't really work out. None of those players wanted to go there. I think that's still going to be a challenge. But like you said, the time to win, it's now.
So just some context. I'm 2 points in front of you for the playoff thing. So you had to pick against me. You had to pick opposite of me. So actually, I'll tell you my answer, and then I want to hear your true, like, if you could just pick no competition, who you would have picked. So I just picked first because, you know, I'm winning, and that's my luxury. I got the Warriors winning in six games. And just as a tiebreaker, I said, I think Klay Thompson is going to win MVP over Steph.
Oh, okay, that's just spiteful. Why are you doing this?
I think Steph Curry is probably the favorite, and so I didn't want to be boring. But secondly, I think if Klay Thompson has a really good, like, notably better series than Steph Curry, the media is going to be fawning all over the storyline of Klay Thompson. He's been out for 2 years. The Warriors haven't even been to the playoffs in those two seasons he was away. Now they're back in the finals. Every year, or, you know, the year that Klay was out, obviously he got injured in the finals, and then comes back 2 years later, and now they're in the finals again. And if it's not for the finals, they haven't even made the playoffs while Klay was out. So I love the story. And if he plays well, if he's scoring like over 25 points per game, I think the media is going to start to side with, like, the idea, this narrative. Like, it's going to be hard to not pick Klay for MVP because the storyline is so great.
Should Steph demand a trade if he doesn't get finals MVP?
I think Steph should... What's that? The ice skater?
Tanya Harding?
Yeah, should. Anyway, should do it.
See, that'd be very cruel in this instance because Klay was just recovering from that injury. Like, at least, like, Nancy Kerrigan, who's the lady that she clubbed, at least she wasn't injured.
Like,
Klay literally is coming back from his injury.
Who would you have wanted... Who do you think it truly is going to win? Who would you have picked?
I definitely would have picked the Warriors, and it would have been a debate whether I give them, I'd say, Warriors in five, very controversial.
Oh, five?
Or six. I was debating about Warriors in five.
So seven.
War six.
So Warriors, you definitely think Warriors are the better team.
Oh, Warriors, they're going to fucking, like, destroy the Celtics.
But the Celtics are betting favorites.
The Celtics are favorite. People do have said, I don't know what the final odds are. Let's see, like, closer to the date. But for a while, the Celtics were definitely favorite over the Warriors. But I think there's multiple reasons for this. One is that the Warriors have the experience. Celtics, first time. First time, there's always going to be butterflies. Secondly, the Celtics are very beat up. They have all the players available. But, you know, these players are going in and out of the lineup. So I don't know how to rate into that. Unfortunately, I couldn't pick that because I have to pick against you. And when I asked you if there was any way that I could pick the Warriors and still win, you shut me down. You also told me that this is what I get.
Yeah,
this is what I get for picking badly.
It's true.
I had to pick the Celtics, and I picked the Celtics in seven.
Okay, well, let me ask you a simple question. Who do you think is the best player in the series?
Stephen Curry.
Who's the second best player?
Draymond Green or Tatum? I guess it's between Draymond.
What, Klay? Klay is not even...
Klay. I think Klay Thompson obviously is going to score more than Draymond Green, but I think Draymond Green has the second most impact. You need Steph... He draws in all the defense. Okay. You need Draymond because he's going to orchestrate. He's going to orchestrate way better than Marcus Smart or anyone else on the Celtics. But you can convince me that it's someone on the Celtics. I can take Tatum, I guess.
I'm not going to convince you because I agree with you ultimately. I think it is Steph who's probably clearly the best player in the series. But something about Tatum, the way he's played, like, in all these series, like, even when they've been down, and I mean, the thing is, they've never been down. Like, they've kind of always been in control of every series, even though the last two have gone to game sevens. But something about Tatum is really kind of like shown to me that he's more mature than before. He's more, in control. Like, he feels more confident than before. First series, like, against the Nets, he was way better than, like, not way better, but he was better than Kevin Durant in that series. There's no question in my mind. Like, I'm not saying that it's something that you can just say this is the case for the rest of his career, but in that series, those four games, Jason Tatum was the best player in that series by far. And if Kevin Durant somehow made it to the finals, a lot of people would be saying, okay, look, Warriors are a better team because, you know, with all the, like, can't count on Kyrie, but Kevin Durant's the best player in the series. Like, people will say that. So all I'm saying is, like, Jason Tatum's on this magical run. He's been playing well, not even just for the postseason. He's been playing even just as well the past 20 games the last 20 games of the regular season. Good enough to earn him first team All NBA. This was a team that, like, more than halfway through, two thirds of the way into the season, they were below 500, and then they went on this, like, and then they were on this great magical run and earned Jason. But then they went on this magical run where earned Jason Tatum first team All NBA honors, and then they go on this postseason run where he's clearly better than Kevin Durant. So I'm just facing this dilemma where he hasn't. He's not the cleanest games. He's not, like, super consistent, but he's shown enough to me that he really has evolved his game to a superstar level where he's one of the best. And Steph Curry is one of the best, if not, like, top 10 of all time kind of status. So Jason Tatum, like, is really knocking on the door, and I really think he could get there, but he has to beat the Warriors, basically. He has to overcome the Warriors to me. So, yeah.
So that's why you picked the Warriors six. What?
No, I'm just saying that's the legend of Jason Tatum is going to grow even exponentially again. And it's hard to keep putting Jason Tatum down a notch and not putting him at the top tier, because he's been playing magical basketball for the last, I don't know, like, 40 games. He's been playing, like, best small forward in the NBA basketball.
Look, I think the Celtics are great and are in this position not because of Tatum, to be honest. I think it's a mixture of their defense, which is a collective effort, and Grant Williams, or you can even say Robert Williams, or you can say Marcus Smart. And I think Tatum is definitely a key player, but he doesn't pop out the screen.
He's not LeBron James. Like, let's put that. He's not LeBron James.
Yeah. I didn't want to say his name. You accuse me of bringing LeBron James up all the time, but that's what I'm thinking. That's what I'm thinking about.
Well, you keep saying these things. Like, you want, like, this star that just controls the whole game and tempo. And I know you're thinking about, like, it's just, like, tattooed on your balls at this point.
Let's not talk about LeBron James. I'm talking about Stephen Curry. Steph Curry. How about Steph Curry? Like, he's so clearly, even when he doesn't score, he's so clearly the person that is drawing all the defense, all the attention, and just sucking everything towards him. And I'm not sure if Tatum is that type of player. And maybe, actually, I don't know. I'm just going to be quiet. Maybe he's going to explode in the finals.
But you're right. Like, Wiggins is a capable person that got him. I could see him being slowed down by Draymond as well. So, yeah, this
The difference is, you know, when Butler's trying to guard Tatum, he has to also be
Otto Porter.
He also has to, well, Otto Porter's injured, so that might be an issue.
Oh, is he out? Oh, yeah.
But I'm saying, you know, when Butler takes on Tatum, that's not real realistic because Butler also needs to score. Wiggins, he can just purely play defense.
Because Steph Curry is, yeah, great.
Steph shooter. Curry, Poole, Klay Thompson. And then, you know, Wiggins can just give you those dunks and open shots and et cetera, right? But his focus can be all on defense. I don't think that was an option for the Heat, and I don't think that was an option for the Bucks either. The Bucks had the similar issue. They have no offense.
And with the Nets, Seth Curry was guarding Jason Tatum.
Oh, God.
Kyrie. Oh, God. Kyrie's like, get out of the way. I got him.
No one. Kyrie's like, out back trying to look for food.
No, honestly, Kyrie was guarding Jason Tatum a lot. I'm not joking about that.
At the time, it didn't feel ridiculous, but now that, you know, we're like in the finals and we think about all the players that tried to guard Tatum.
Oh, like in the regular season, like, yeah, when Kyrie was playing, he was guarding Jason Tatum, no problem. But that's my point. He's been on this really special run in the last last 20 games of the regular season and into the postseason. So if this run is going to be cemented as like an all-time great, they have to beat the Warriors. That's all I'm saying. Because Jason Tatum is knocking on the door, and I want to say Jason Tatum because he's been on such a special run, but he needs, like, let's cement it then. Let's beat the Warriors. Let's show you're a super, superstar, like top three in the NBA level talent. Like, because this is what's going to get you there. Because Giannis, before last season, yes, he was considered like a great because he was MVP already, but you couldn't, like Jokic, right? Jokic is a two-time MVP. Is he a top three? Are you saying he's a top three NBA player? No. He wins a championship, though. He gets your team to the finals and wins a chip. How about then? Giannis was already doing that, but got his chip. There's no doubting his resume. There's no doubting his skill. There's no doubting he as a player in today's NBA, like where he stands. He's top three, no doubt. Jason Tatum has got a chance to earn that. Maybe not top three, that's a bit stretch, but top five for sure. He can earn that right now. This is it. And being the Warriors is more than enough of a resume builder, being Steph at his own, like where Steph's home is in the finals. He makes the finals for breakfast.
Look, we've been talking for way too long. We've covered many, many topics.
I'm not changing my pick to the Celtics, actually.
You want to pick the Celtics? I'll take the Warriors if you pick the Celtics.
Nah, okay. I'm joking. No, I got the
Damn
Warriors.
Damn you. Warriors.
Couldn't live with myself if I picked the Celtics.
So you force them on me. Okay.
Well, of course, you have to win, right? I don't even know what the stakes are, but you're
basically I feel like I'm in debt at this point. I've been losing the last 2 years. I still owe you a present. I've got some ideas. No, I got some ideas. I think you'll enjoy them. Listeners, we're at the end of another show. It's been a very eventful few weeks. We had many things happen in the world. Until next time, please contact your politicians about gun control. Make your voice heard. Thank you.
And watch Steve Kerr.
Love him.
Go Dubs.
Get that Finals MVP play. Thank you for listening to Your NBA Podcast with David and Kane. If you enjoyed our show, please tweet us at Your NBA Podcast.